originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello again, everyone. Good afternoon and welcome to the show trainers listen to. It is Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Happy to have you with us on this Wednesday evening. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, retired top trainer Jude Feld. You know him as Pontiff of the Pick Four. We are with you once again in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and happy to have everyone tuning in throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, and all of you tuning in worldwide on your website, your computer, or your tablets. You're doing that with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. And JT, once again, we welcome a special guest to our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. And again, I say this quite often on the program, one of the cool things about Trainer Talk, and we've been doing this now since, 2012, I guess, was our very first show with Ron Ellis sitting there at Santa Anita. We've talked to Bob Baffert. We've talked to Todd Pletcher. We've talked to the Chad Browns of the world. We've also talked to other trainers that maybe haven't quite made that kind of name in the business yet, but they're well on their way.
Yeah, it's great to have the young trainers on and find out what they're doing, their philosophies on training, and what their operation's like and where they plan to go. So it's an interesting show. No matter who we have on, we always learn something.
And I know you love it as a former trainer because you've been in their shoes in a lot of different respects, not just with the new people that are getting started, and even with some of the people like Bob Baffert and Todd. You've been in their position, so to speak, and then to see where their careers have gone is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, well, you know, you see guys like Todd and all of the Lucas disciples have gone on to do some great things. And I'm proud of the fact that I've had some guys become leading trainers, Doug O'Neill, Pete Miller. Those guys, were in my barn, and it was a lot of fun having them there. And then to see what they've done, just fantastic.
Yeah, we welcome tonight one of the exciting young stars in the sport. He is trainer Troy Wismer, and Troy has saddled 49 winners to date, seven of those coming already here in 2018. So yeah, the first few months of the year have been very good to Troy and his operation, and he is with us now in studio on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Troy, welcome, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, happy to have you on board, and glad you could make it into the studio. So often we have to talk to trainers on the phone. It's always better in person.
Yeah, it's a little easier. I'm not well on the phone. I'm not a good speaker on the phone anyways.
Well, look, you grew up just about an hour from where we're sitting right now in the Ville,
yes,
in Louisville.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I grew up just outside of Louisville in Oldham County.
Yep. So I'm going to ask you this right off the bat. We'll get this out of the way for our listeners in Central Kentucky. You bleed blue or you bleed red?
I like the Cardinals.
We won't hold that.
He's not bleeding, at least.
Well, tell me about your love of horse racing. Where did it all begin?
Well, my father trains, and he started at a young age. He started galloping when he was about 14 in Manitoba, Canada. He's from Brandon, Manitoba. And I grew up on a farm. I was always with him every day, a track brat at the track, every weekend, every summer, missing school whenever I could. We went all over, from Saratoga to Canterbury to Florida. Everywhere, and I just loved it. And when I was able to finally be old enough, I started galloping when I was about 15, and just fell in love with it. And that's what I've done every day since.
And you always knew this is what you wanted to do.
At first, I thought I wanted to be a football player, but I never grew enough.
Did you play in high school?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, played for Trinity.
What position?
I played safety, and I ran back punts and kicks.
Were you any good?
We were good. We had three state championships when we were there, and I started, so it was a nice run.
Excellent. That's a good little record.
Yeah. It was. I was there with Brian Brom. He was the star of the show.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
He was pretty good. How was he to play with?
Awesome. Great guy. Yeah, really good guy.
Did you ever try to get him into horse racing?
No, not yet. We stay in contact a little bit, but he hasn't mentioned anything about the horses.
So you mentioned your dad training horses for all those years, and that's where everything kind of got started for you. Tell me a little bit about your dad and his operation, his philosophies.
Well, he was a trainer that made it on his own. He left home when he was like 12 years old, 8 kids, you know, poor family in Canada. So he had to go to work. And when he was 21, he moved to the state. He moved to Florida to go to train, and he stayed here the whole, you know, he stayed in the U.S. And he raced at Churchill for 30 years. He won the Kentucky Oaks in 92 with Love Me, Love Me Not. He had a Derby hopeful in 89. His name was Mr. Zipty Doodah. He beat Gulch and Bett twice in Florida. And then he got sick right before the Derby, went to the clinic, and unfortunately passed away. But he's had a good career. He's won a lot of grade ones. You know, he still trains. He's trying to cut down, but I don't know if you ever get out of the business. He races at Presque Isle right now.
Yeah, we're talking about Glenn Wismer, your father.
Yes, sir.
Right? Glenn is his name. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, he was a household name around Churchill for many, many years. And I didn't know he went to Presque Isle. That's cool. Old trainers, a lot of times they lose their clients, and it's hard to get new ones because everybody wants the young guy, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's fortunate enough. He's had the same group of clients for about 35 years, and he just got tired of the moving and the shipping and the hustle and the bustle. He can go. He likes there. He goes there for 6 months. He never ships to run. He just races there. Then after there, he takes 3 months off, gets ready for 3 months, and goes back to training.
How old were you when he won the Kentucky Oaks in 92? Were you like 7?
I was in the second grade, I think it was. Yeah.
Were you there?
Yeah. No, I wasn't there. I wasn't there.
Did it kill you not to be there?
Yeah. Well, I had, you know, I have 3 sisters and an older brother, and my older brother got to go, but the younger ones, we had to stay at home because you've been to Oaks and Derby. It's a mess. And I was a wild kid too. So there wasn't much that contained me when I was a kid. So I'm sure that they had to keep me away.
I just pulled up the chart of that 92 Kentucky Oaks, and the favorite was Prospector's Delight under Pat Day. Ended up finishing third behind your horse, Love Me, Love Me Not, your dad's horse, who won at 11-1. So it wasn't really expected necessarily.
No. Well, she came out of a Tampa Bay Oaks win, and at that point, the Tampa Bay Oaks wasn't graded. And then after that, it got graded the next year. Because, you know, she went on to win the Oaks. So that helped them get their, you know, their Oaks graded.
What do you remember about your dad's reaction? I mean, I know you were so young, but do you remember your dad coming home and celebrating? Or what was that moment?
Yeah, I remember he was celebrating. And one thing I really remember, and I don't know why, is that I went and I got a new pair of Jordans. that's the only thing I really remember.
He must have cashed a ticket, huh?
That's outstanding. A very special moment in the life of Troy Wismer, who is our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. So some of your earliest memories of being around your dad's operation would be what?
Churchill at the barn, the track kitchen, eating and watching horses train. You know, it was nice then, you know, back then at Churchill, when he was a mainstay there, he had a lot of nice allowance horses and stakes horses, and it was nice to be around the big horses. I didn't comprehend it then. You know, you're a kid, and I was more about just running around and being wild than, you know, really paying attention when I was that young. But, you know, I wish now, looking back, I would have been more attentive to it. But, you know, you're a kid. So it was just, I just loved being there with them. You know, my dad, he was always a laid-back guy. A good attitude in the barn. His crew always worked well together and always happy. That was back in the day where, you know, it was mostly black guys that they were all family. They, you know, they worked together for 10, 15 years, and they were at the barn all day. And it was just a good atmosphere back then.
You know, you're only 600 and something wins behind your dad. Yeah. Does he ever remind you of that?
No, he doesn't remind me of that. He reminds me every day what I should be doing and what I'm doing wrong.
Talk about that. How great is it to have somebody like your dad to fall back on?
It is really nice. It is nice. It helps a lot, especially because my dad's a lot like me. He's a very hands-on guy. He's 71, and he still gallops, and he still shoes his own horses. And anytime I've got a question about foot, a horse, you know, anything that's not quite going right, it always helps because, you know, he has had the experience and he's been around, you know, he's seen it all and he's done it all. And, you know, and he's been the one that has put his hands on him and done it. So that, you know, that experience helps a lot. And I was actually a blacksmith for 5 years before I decided to be a trainer. So that, you know, I gallop and I shoe and, you know, hands-on kind of same family environment. He always liked to keep around 25, 30 horses, and I'm the same way. I like to keep around 20 to 30 horses. That way it's an easier number to see. You know, you might not have the big numbers and the, you know, the big percentages when you keep the smaller stable, but for me, it's easier to keep on top of everything.
Yeah, it's important, I think, to be there. And nowadays we see so many guys that have, you know, hundreds of horses in training, and I just wouldn't feel comfortable doing it that way. But I know they do, and they're, you know, tremendously successful at doing it. But I just like to know the horses that I'm training, yeah. You know?
I feel the same way. I mean, whenever I have horses, whenever I have to have an overflow into another barn, I just feel like they're being neglected. Even if they're not, like, even, you know, they're getting the same thing every other horse is, but just because I don't get to see them when I walk by them, every, you know, every turn, I feel like they're getting neglected. And that's why I like to try and keep it as a small number and not split stables and not go to two different tracks.
You wouldn't want to have a big number?
I wouldn't, no. Uh-uh. I mean, it, you know, it's nice. It is nice to, you know, have a big number and, you know, you have a better percentage, you know, better chance of getting the big horse, the more horses you have. But it's such a, every day is such intricate little details of the business. And, you know, I don't think I could handle if I got into a big number. My OCD would take over.
You'd have to get a shoer.
I mean,
good point.
When he said his father's 71 and shoeing horses, I said, I want to see this guy when he gets out of bed in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Well, he jumps right up. He's fitter than I am.
That's unbelievable.
Really?
I don't shoe horses, and I look like I just did about 30 the day before when I get out of bed. That's amazing.
And he's still galloping, too.
Yeah, he's still galloping. He's tough. He's a tough old man. They don't make him like that anymore.
Wow.
You know, if an exercise rider doesn't show up, he might get on 15 one day. I can't even do that.
How many horses do you have now, Troy?
I have 20. And, okay. You know, we still have some babies to trickle in. So we'll hopefully be up to about 30 by midsummer.
How challenging can it be for a stable like yours with just 20-plus horses to compete with the bigger stables like the Todd Pletchers and the Steve Asmussens and guys like that?
It is very challenging. It is very challenging because, you know, they have the pick. You know, they go to the sale. They get, if a nice horse goes to the ring and Todd Pletcher comes up and says, I'd like to train that horse, 90% of the time they send him to Todd Pletcher. So, I mean, you can't blame them. Those guys have, you know, they have the success. They have the numbers to, you know, the percentages to back that. So it is tough, but we compete everywhere we go. You know, we win races here at Keeneland. The last two meets, Gulfstream, we've had a good couple runs in Saratoga. You know, you have to pick your spots. You really have to pick your spots because you just can't, you can't go in there hoping. You got to know.
Yeah, it's a mindset too when you have a smaller stable because you know you're not going to be the leading trainer, but you know you get excited sometimes when you start out the meet really good and you know you see your name in the standings. It looks good, but it can't possibly last because these guys are throwing horse after horse after you. And I remember one meet at Sanita. I was like third leading trainer, and every night Trevor Denman would say, you know, Jude Feld in third and Ron McAnally in fourth, Charlie Whittingham in fifth. And I go, wow, look at this. But, you know, that lasted about maybe 4 weeks. And then I fell right off the charts because the numbers just get to you. But you can't let that worry you. If you're confident in your abilities and the horses that you have, you just got to keep plugging away and know you're not going to be the leading trainer, but you're going to do really well.
Yeah, I think in this business too is percentages. If you're able to keep your percentage high, owners look at that, and that helps a lot. And placing your horses, you know, just because you're at Keeneland or you're at Gulfstream, but you know you have a horse that might need to go run somewhere else. You know, you have to do it. You have to ship. You have to run. You got to put your horses where they can be competitive.
That's a great point about the percentages. I think a lot of owners will go through the trainer list and simply look at percentages and say, okay, this guy wins at 28%. This other person over here only wins at 18%. I'm going with the person that wins at 28%.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, even when you talk to some gamblers, you know, they look at percentage of trainers and percentage of jockeys, and that's what they go on. They might not even look at the horse's past performance or, you know, the horse's odds. They'll look at, you know, just the percentage, and they say they've had a lot more success just gambling off that than anything.
Is that good or bad for a trainer?
It can be good and can be bad because there's lots of good trainers that will have slopes, and you know, then 1 year they might have a bad percentage because you have to have horses. You know, you have to have horsepower. You know, 1 year you might not have the quality of horses that you did the past couple years, and it's you know, that might be your rebuilding year. And you know, hopefully your clients and you know, you guys have a good enough relationship that you can carry on to the next year when you get the horses. You know, when you get the better horses again the next year.
Yep.
Talk about that a minute. What the relationships that you build, how important that is in educating your clients and making them understand how the game works.
That's key. That's key. The big thing I found, you know, being a young trainer, and it is hard, you know, getting clients and keeping clients and everybody happy, is that it's nice to have clients that have been in the game, have been in the business, and you know, they've had the ups and the downs, and they know what it takes, and you know, on the everyday, and they know that not every horse is going to be a you know, main special horse. You know, not every horse is going to be able to run it too. And that helps a lot. You know, there's a lot of new owners coming in the game now, and they want instant success. And, you know, the instant success, if you get it, it's great. But, I mean, it doesn't always happen, you know. So it's nice to have clients. It's nice to have all clients, but it is nice to have experienced clients.
Talk about some of the clients that have supported you so far.
I have some great clients. Well, one is one of my dad's clients who's had for 30 years, Joseph Novogratz. He has a nice filly, Amy Challenge, she's going to the Oaks with Mac Robinson. People you could have, it doesn't matter, you know, if a horse runs bad or if you have, you know, a horse come up with an issue, you call him and talk to him about it. And, you know, they're just okay, you know, as long as they just like the communication. As long as you call them, talk to them, tell them straight, you know, you can't lie or anything like that. You know, that's the main thing I found with the clients. They just want communication.
Dominican, didn't they? Wasn't that Silverton Hill?
They did, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always remember him because I had a $666 Quinnell at Keeneland with their horse that they had bought, I think in Europe maybe. It was a foreign horse in any case, and that's the biggest Quinnell I ever hit in my life. That's ridiculous.
Well, it has to be rewarding It has to make your job easy when you have clients like that you can kind of go back and forth and just have that open communication.
It is. It makes it, I mean, in this business, when you come in the barn, every day could be something different. You don't get too many days where everything goes perfect in horse racing. I mean, this old Australian trainer told me one time, he said, horses are the only animals that try to kill themselves 23 hours of the day. the other hour they're sleeping. So it's more just managing problems, training, you know. Training is just, you know, learning and knowing how to manage the mishaps and the little things that happen and being able to carry on with those. And that took a few years, you know, that took a few years to figure out that, you know, sometimes stuff's just going
to
happen.
Yeah, the first time you had to make a phone call like that owners.
I thought I was going to throw up. You know, it's never easy, but those first few times, it was gut-wrenching.
Yeah. Yeah. How about on the flip side of that, when you have to make that phone call that everything's like going perfect?
When you just win a nice race, that's like the biggest high you could have. That's easy. You're walking on cloud nine.
You can make that phone call all day long.
I wish I made it every day.
Like Lasbrera had that filly. He's called the owner. He said, you want the good news or the bad news? He goes, well, give me the good news. Your filly won the race. What's the bad news? She ran in the infield lake and drowned. So, yeah, Richard Mandel always talks about that, too. He says, you go to the barn, you know there's going to be something wrong. It just depends on how bad it's going to be, right? Yeah. So yeah. It's funny, too, because we all love to get up in the morning and go see our horses, right? But you know, when you get there, when the groom says, oh, you better come down and look at this horse, that's like the worst thing. Your heart just sinks. It's terrible.
Yeah, it is. It's the toughest part about it.
Talking with trainer Troy Wismer here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Troy, when you get there in the mornings, what's your routine? What's the very first thing that you do?
The very first thing I do is go through all the stalls and, you know, check legs and check the horses. And by that time, you know, the grooms have them tied up, all the bandages off, and the feed tubs and water buckets are out. And so I'm able to, while I'm going from stall to stall, I'm able to see, you know, what they've left, if they've eaten, you know. And it's just to be able to check them over, you know, early in the morning before they go out and train. Just because if there is, like you said, you come in the morning and there's something going on, that you don't miss it, you know, that you're able to address it right away.
Yeah, it's easier to catch it ahead of time, I'd imagine, right?
Yeah.
Than have something come up later and have to deal with it then.
Yep, for sure.
yeah, the sooner you find the problem and address it, the better it's going to turn out in the end. Ordinarily, you never know. But there's no, that's the other thing about being a trainer that's kind of cool in a way, is there's nothing's ever cut and dried, right?
No.
I mean, you know, you think it's, oh, this is the worst thing that ever happened, and sometimes it turns out to be okay.
Absolutely, you know? Yeah. Sometimes a little time helps you. You know, you might think it's a big setback at that time, but it, you know, you maybe the horse needed just a little bit more time, or, you know, the timing.
It's anything. A good point. It's,
you know, sometimes, you know, you can't always jump to conclusion like it's the worst thing that ever happened. Sometimes, you know, you might not have been able to run them as a 2-year-old, but they turn out to be a great 3-year-old.
What was your first year on your own?
2011.
So what's the biggest lesson that you've had to learn since going out on your own?
Communication. Owners love communication. Training horses isn't, I mean, it's a day, I mean, maybe just for me, but it's easy. Like, it's, you know, the horse tells you, you know, that if they're sick, you know, you treat them. If they're sore, you know, you do the things to help them, or you turn them out. I mean, the training is pretty much, you're going in circles. It's easy to do. The biggest thing about, you know, the hardest thing about being a trainer is, for me, is the communication and the planning. You know, you have, that's the biggest thing that I had to learn, that you have to communicate and you have to plan. And, you know, even if the plan doesn't work out, but, you know, the owners like to know and like to hear, even if it's 5 months down the road, you know, which races you're wanting to go to. And if you're, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a nice stake horse or allowance horse, which races you, you know, you're pointing out and what tracks. And that helps a lot.
Yeah, people, especially in today's day and age with social media and everything, people want to know, like, right away. I mean, you certainly don't want somebody to say where your horse is running on social media before you before have a chance to call the client. Yeah. So,
and it has, you know, it is nice now, like, pretty much everybody texts and emails and calls. So it is nice and easy to just shoot a quick text in the morning after a horse breezes, or when you're getting ready to make an entry. And so, I mean, that, I think the, like, guys like Mark Cassie are great communicators, you know, and that's one reason why he's built the stable and the string that he has, is because you have to communicate.
Do you do much on social media?
I do a little. I need to get better.
Is that big nowadays in terms of helping trainers communicate?
I think so. You know, I mean, it might be not communicate with their clients, but communicate with the outside world. You know, everybody, you know, everybody's tweeting or on Instagram, and, you know, you see, you know, the guys that, you know, that I think have a little bit more success. You know, it is when you have more horses, like we talked about, and you are running a lot, it is easier to tweet, you know, a lot and send out different Instagram messages. But, you know, with a smaller stable of 20, where you might run 2 horses in a month, you know, they might, you don't have as much to post.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got a bunch in tomorrow. I don't like to date the show, but aren't you running like 3 tomorrow?
I have 2 in here at Keeneland tomorrow on Wednesday, and they both should be very competitive. One filly, Inspired Val, she just broke a track record last time out at Keeneland, or I'm sorry, at Gulfstream, 7.5 furlongs on the turf. But the race before that, she came off a layoff, about a 7-month layoff, and the race before that, she got beat a nose, and they broke the track record with Christophe Clement beat me, and we're actually hooking heads again tomorrow. So we're, but I came back and beat him. I beat his track record and pulled a higher buyer number than she did. So I think it will be tough. It'll be a nice race.
You're a competitive guy. You played football in high school, yes, right? We touched on that earlier. So when you get into a bit of a rivalry like that with another trainer or another horse, do your competitive juices start flowing and you really want to win?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's kind of what drives you in this sport. You have to be competitive. You know, you have to stay on your toes. You have to have the drive. You know, it's 7 days a week. You know, it's early mornings and late nights. I mean, you're going to have the drive. And maybe the competitiveness is what, you know, drives me, because I played, you know, I wrestled in high school also, you know, played a lot of different sports. I rodeo some, you know, I team rope and calf rope, and I love, you know, I love to compete. And, you know, and like you said, when you, like, you, like, I'm competing with Christoph's horse, and Christoph is a great guy. And I was talking to him the other day, and we were joking about it. And I told him, you know, you're not going to get me this time.
So, I think you just need to pin him in the winner's circle. Just take him down in front of everybody.
He may not go down that fast. He's pretty tough.
Yeah, you might have met your man. He's in a little higher weight class.
Yeah, just a little.
And by the way, this show being recorded on Tuesday afternoon, and people listening are going to hear Troy talk about his horse running on Wednesday at Keeneland. So they're listening to this Wednesday night. Your horse will have already run by the time this show is airing. Yeah. So we want to point that out. They can go back and check the results and see if you were spot on.
Hopefully it helps me out.
And then watch the video replay if Christoph beats him.
Squaring off. In the
You want to make a name for yourself, kid? We got a way for you to do it. Troy Wismar, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. So many top moments in his career already. And, you know, I think that's the cool thing about it. You know, your dad had his moments of winning his greatest stakes and winning the Kentucky Oaks that we talked about earlier. There are moments that you've had already that aren't Kentucky Oaks. They're not Kentucky Derby. They're not greatest stakes necessarily, but they are top moments to you. And I think that that's what's amazing as we see trainers develop and go through. So if you could pick your top moment so far, what would it be?
For me, it was when I started out training, I just had a couple cheap horses of my, you know, of my own that I bought or claimed, you know, and kind of had to build throughout the years. I didn't come up under a Lucas or a Pletcher, or, you know, any of those guys where, you know, when you branch out on your own, you have some of the bigger clients that you can carry on with you. I just, like I said, I was a blacksmith and I worked with my dad. And, you know, when I decided I wanted to train, it was just kind of a gradual, you know, gradual step. It wasn't a big move of 20 horses, you know, right out of, you know, right from when I started. So for me, like I had, the first one was I bought my first horse on my own, bought my first 2-year-old on my own. I broke it and I trained, you know, I broke it and its first race, it was 99-1 and, it won first time out as a 2-year-old. And, so that was a big moment, you know, my first purchase and my first horse that I broke for myself and, you know, it won first time out. That was a big, you know, that was a big highlight. And then,
did you bet on him?
I did.
That helps.
That helps.
99-1
And then I had a nice Sky Mesa filly at Woodbine that she'd chipped a knee with somebody in Pennsylvania as a 2-year-old and coming off the layoff. She won first time out, 7 furlongs on the turf at Woodbine Main Special Weight. And she actually is a half to Sudden Breaking News. So she was a nice filly, big 17 hand tall Sky Mesa that was absolutely crazy. Mm-hmm. So that was a nice score because she took so much to develop. You know, cause you'd come in the morning and when she'd see you, she'd want to get out of the stall and go graze. She was a project. So when a project like that you have to put so much time into wins, you know, especially first time out main special weight, and she was also a high odd. I think she was over 80-1, and so that was, you know, those are the ones. You know, that the big scores like that. And I'm not a bettor. I might bet $2 or whatever, but it's just nice, you know, that they've overcome. You know, they're 99-1. Nobody thinks anything of them. And then they go out there and they win. That's a good feeling.
We're going to make sure he has both of our cell phone numbers before he leaves here. 99-1, 80-1. Troy, text us anytime. Feel free. Troy Wismar with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. We're going to get to a short break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about his career and some of those moments that really stand out to him. We'll do that next. It's Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Selected sales, superior results. Nominate now to Fasig Tipton's selected yearling sales, which are stronger than ever. The July sale for precocious athletic yearlings, the prestigious Saratoga sale, where leading buyers have searched for their next champion or classic winner for nearly 100 years, and the New York bred sale, which offers the cream of the New York bred crop. Learn more and nominate at FasigNoms.com. Fasig Tipton selected yearling sales, stronger than ever.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pin hooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. to breed the best, to race the best, and to stand the best. Windstar Farm, dedicated to the dream.
A leader in turf racing across North America, Woodbine, one of the world's most dynamic gaming, racing, and entertainment companies, returns for championship thoroughbred horse racing in April. Committed to racing excellence and innovation, Woodbine is proud to offer the Graded Stakes Bonus Program for the 2018 racing season, allowing horsemen and women alike more opportunities to race against the best of the best. Woodbine continually strives to bring the most competitive and high-quality fields to the horse racing community and to its fans, and with this offer, now is your chance to race with champions. Owners, trainers, and horses come for the action and excitement. They come for the finest in hospitality treatment and dining. They come for the competitive purses. They come to Woodbine, the Northern Gem, transcending the sport of racing today for tomorrow. To learn more about the Graded Stakes Competition Bonus, call the Woodbine Race Office today.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Phasic Tipton.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios, and happy to have you back with us. Everybody tuning in throughout North America on Sirius 219 XM Channel 201, and everyone streaming us worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of our visit on Trainer Talk tonight with trainer Troy Wismer, well, all you have to do is head over to our website after we finish up, and you can listen to the podcast at your leisure. It's there, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. That was a quick half hour, wasn't it, Troy?
It went by a lot faster than I thought it was.
Yeah, funny. Yeah. Before he sat down, he told us that he didn't know if he had a half hour in him. He talked for a half hour. And we hear that from almost every trainer we ask to come on the show. And we always love to tell that story about Bill Mott, who joined us on this program a few years ago. And at that point, we were just interviewing trainers for 30 minutes. And we do one trainer for 30 minutes, and the second half would be a different trainer for another 30 minutes. And Bill told us that he couldn't talk for a half hour. He didn't think he had enough stories in him for 30 minutes to talk about Bill Mott. We never even got to cigar, and we had to get the hook and pull the plug because we had to get to the commercial break and our second trainer. It's amazing how quick it goes by.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Yeah, you would think Bill Mott would know. I mean,
he's got a few stories.
Yeah.
He's accomplished a few things.
Not getting stalls at Centennial Park. So you think you got it rough.
Yeah, think about that. There was a time when Bill Mott, his horses weren't good enough to get stalls at Centennial Park.
He actually, he was in the same barn as my dad when they were in their 20s at River Downs.
Wow.
Yeah. So that goes back long time ago.
Well, there's another one, Bill Mott running at River Downs, right? Yeah. You don't think about that now when you think about where trainers come from. And that's the exciting part about sitting here with Troy. 3, 4, 5 years from now, we could be sitting here and talking about a whole different sort of circumstances. Maybe it's a Derby win on the horizon. Who knows?
That's the dream. That's why you get up every morning for those big races, especially the Derby.
What about sales? Do you go to the sales a lot, or do you like to buy horses like that?
I do. I go to all the sales. When I can and when it works. I hit pretty much all the sales.
His favorite's Phasic Tipton.
Yeah, Phasic Tipton does a great sale. They're great people. The sales are great. You got to go out there and you got to see everybody and you got to talk. And the sales are a great place because it's where everybody meets. Everybody comes there and you get to talk and see the different clients and hopefully pick up some more business.
Talk about what you're looking for in young horses.
When I'm looking for young horses, I mean, you want to look for athletes, horses that, that can stay sound and that are in your price range. And every client has a different price range and every client has some different type of horse that they're looking for. And those are the main things that you got to look for. You can't just go in, have, one horse that you're going to look at, especially nowadays with as, competitive as the sales are. You have to go in there with an open mind. And, you have to be able to to see some horses that might have a little bit of a flaw. And if you know that you can keep that horse sound, or you know that you can live with that flaw, you might be able to get a horse that you know should be 200,000 that might go for 100,000. And you have to feel comfortable with them. You have to know that that's the type of horse that you can hopefully win with, and hopefully you know keep the horse's longevity.
Yeah, do you have like a formula to work a big sale like Keeneland, or do you have people that go out and look with you, or how does that work?
There's no real formula. You have to have people. You know, there's just too many horses to look at, and you know, the more people you get, the more ideas, you know, the more eyes, you know, the better. I'm lucky. My wife also does the sales, Erin Wismer, and she goes and she looks at all the horses, and we have a few other friends that you know that work with us and go look at horses, and you know, the clients that they'll have their team too. So I mean, it's a group process. You know, in my experience, in our team, it's a team process, not just one person going.
Your wife, she's fantastic, and she's the reason you're on this show, because she walks up to me at Keeneland, doesn't know me from third base, and says, "How am I going to get my husband on your show?" I said, "He can come on whenever he wants. How about in 2 weeks on Wednesday?" She said,
yeah,
"Fine."
Yeah. She's a lot more aggressive than me. This is actually the first interview I've ever done, and
wow.
I've never done a TV interview or anything, and I've been asked a few times and kind of avoided them, you know, kind of never, you know, felt a little uncomfortable going on, and especially when the camera's in your face. This isn't too bad because we're sitting here talking. When the camera's sitting there staring at you, it, you know, that's a little different. So, no, she is. She's great. She goes to all the sales. You know, she works hard. You know, she works with a good team, and, you know, she loves the business. She didn't grow up in the business. She, nobody in her family does anything with horses. When she was a kid, that she'd go and clean stalls at a riding stable so that she would, you know, be able to do the riding lessons. And when she got out of college, she went to the racetrack and started grooming and then exercising and then did sales. She's worked her way up, and, you know, she's a hard worker and a great person.
Did you meet her at the racetrack?
I did. Yeah, I did. I went to, a racetrack in Canada, Fort Erie, and, would have been 2007, and I went up there really to rodeo. I brought two horses of my own, didn't run under my name, you know, ran them under a friend's name, and I just went up there and hit a lot of rodeos, and you know, it was kind of just had a fun summer, and we met there, and then she, you know, we stayed together and started traveling together.
Is there an advantage to having ridden in rodeos and those types of horses, and now taking some of those characteristics and applying them to racehorses? Is there some advantage there or crossover?
Maybe not advantage, but, you know, like I said, I'm hands-on. I gallop, and you know, when there's a horse that's had a problem or, you know, is an issue, and that's one thing I'm good at is taking those type of horses, because I have had, you know, the rodeo experience, and you know, I know how to handle them. And so that's one thing that has helped a lot. Maybe not so much for winning races, but the day-to-day training, you know, getting them to go and behave, it helps.
Yeah, there's been a few trainers that are former rodeo riders. Carl Nasker, of course, always comes to mind.
Yeah, there's a lot. You know, I think there's only a very small, small percentage of people that can actually make a living at rodeos. The rest of us just spend money, so then you have to go get a real job.
Spend money and a lot of time in the hospital.
Did you ever try bull riding?
No, never did.
You ever want to?
When I was a little kid, my mom told me I couldn't do it until I was grown up. When I was grown up, I, you know, decided against it.
Thought your mom was pretty smart. Yeah. Huh?
Troy Wismer here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, enjoying this visit in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios. I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier when you talked about going to the sale, and you talked about looking at horses, and especially if you have a limited budget and you're trying to find those horses that might have a little flaw that you know you can work with and keep them sound and overcome. Give me an example. What would one of those types of flaws be that you say, all right, I can work with this, we can get him through and he'll be great, or she'll be great?
A lot of it's confirmation. You know, obviously everybody wants a perfect confirmation, you know, perfectly correct, perfectly balanced. But like you talked about, I mean, especially these past 2 years, I mean, the sales have just erupted. I mean, they're all-time highs. I mean, it's a great market right now. And so you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to weed through some of the horses. And maybe a couple years ago, you wouldn't have, you know, a horse might toe out just a little bit, and you wouldn't have bought that horse because you didn't have to. But now all the other, you know, the other horses are going for 600, 500, you know, where 4 years ago they were going for 100. You know, you have to pick through those flaws and learn to live with them. And, you know, a racehorse doesn't know that, you know, that they have the imperfections.
How many horses have you been around that have had these little issues and turned out to be really nice horses? I hear these stories all the time.
Oh, lots. I mean, yeah. I mean, when it comes down to it, most of the horses that are perfectly correct, they're not, they can't run. You know, the one, that one horse that has the leg, that wings. And
yeah. I used to say points toward Caliente. You know, I had a lot of pointed toward Caliente horses, and yeah, it's amazing sometimes, how you see a horse and you watch him walk or whatever, and you think, oh Lord, but you look at that horse's chart and he's won like 15-20 races. And
yeah. You know. And like I said, I mean, I came up under, you know, on my own under cheaper horses, and those are the type of horses that you have. They have the problems. And I think that has helped me, you know, now that I look back, it's helped me, you know, forward myself in the business, is that I've had to deal with those problems, you know, and I've had to deal with the, you know, the horses that were claimers and cheaper horses, and you know, do the day to day to keep them going and, you know, get them to win races. You know, I wasn't fortunate enough to be able to just, if something's going wrong, well, we, you know, turn it out and carry on, because you got more coming in. You know, you had to fight through the daily, you know, the daily battle.
I want to go back a couple of years ago, Troy, when you were at a 2-year-old sale down in Florida, and there was a horse that sold for more than $1 million. I think it was 1.2.
Yes, sir.
And you were standing there, you were going to be the trainer of that horse. Take me back and tell me that story.
That was a great time. You know, I never thought I'd have a sale topper.
Yeah.
You know, I went from having five horses to, you know, picking up a great group of people on Breeze Easy, and they jumped right in, and they wanted, you know, they wanted to buy horses, and they wanted to buy good horses and big horses. And I mean, that was a fun experience. You know, that they buy some nice horses, and they're, you know, they've just, that's their first year of buying horses. So, I mean, if you really go back and think about it, that's a crazy time. You know, your very first year getting in the business and you buy a sale topper.
What's that like? I mean, seeing the bids keep going up and then seeing it close to $1 million, then it hits $1 million. Put us in your shoes. What's that like?
I mean, it was intense. It was that was a great feeling. I mean, obviously, if it was my own money, I wouldn't have felt that good. But, you know, being able to be around it and being part of the process, it was great. It was a lot of fun and a good experience.
Yeah, I can imagine quite a rush too when the gavel comes down. Sold. Yeah. Right?
It was almost as good as winning a race. Yeah. It was almost as good as winning a race. I think some owners too, they love the sales and they love the bidding. I think they get a rush out of the bidding also. You know, not just winning races, but I mean, they get that competitive, you know, the competitive nature, and that goes and that transfers into the sales.
Yeah, sales are interesting because you never know what people are thinking. You know, I had a client one time who had his fiance with him at the sale, and he got in a bidding war with Lucas and Bruce Headley, and he leaned over and whispered something, and I think it was, "I'm going to get this horse," you know, and you're looking at two guys that have big budgets, right? So he won the battle. He got the horse, but he lost the war. The horse wasn't that good. But I tried to get him to stop at 100, and he went to 380. So anyway, it was brutal. But people get funny at sales. Sometimes they won't let a horse go. Well, we had Mick Ruiz to talk about Bolt Oro, right?
Yeah.
And it was a $5,000 bid on a $650,000 horse that got him that one. So
yeah,
you just never know.
I was sitting there with one client, and you know, we set up aside our, you know, what we thought the horse was worth, and I think it was right about 100, and he was going about 120, 130, and I was like, I leaned over, I was like, you know, I mean, this horse was more valued at 100, you know, we're stretching now at 130, you know, I don't really think this horse is worth that much. And he kept bidding, and afterwards he got the horse, I think he stopped it for like 150, and afterwards he told me, he goes, "I once bought a Christmas tree at an auction for $30,000. I don't like to get outbid."
Wow.
That's a heck of a Christmas tree.
It must have been.
Pretty special. Troy Wismer here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Troy, outside of your father, what other trainers or what other people have had the biggest influence on your career?
I worked with Kirk Zadie for a few years, and he's, you know, he had a great career, very, very high percentage, very intelligent guy, very good horseman. I still to this day, you know, if something doesn't work or whatever, you know, I might call him and ask him. He's suspended right now for a few years.
So he's got lots of time to talk.
Yeah, a little blemish on his, you know, a little blemish on his record. But he was a leading trainer in Florida for many years, leading percentage trainer in Florida for many years. And when I was working with him, we had about 70 horses. So it was a good experience to go from, you know, being around 20 horses to the 70 horses, because you get to see so much. You know, you get to see all the different problems every day because there's more horses to see.
Will you keep an eye on other trainers today? I mean, and what I mean by that is, will you watch their operation, how they do things?
You have to watch everything.
Really?
Yeah. You got to stay competitive.
Yeah. So what are you looking for when you watch, like, Todd, or you watch Steve Asmussen or somebody like that? What are the things that you're trying to keep an eye on?
Oh, things that I watch are, you know, just how horses train and how horses move and, you know, how the horses look. You know, and if the horse is training, you know, they might have a horse training one way on the racetrack, and you know, you get to see and be like, well, you know, that horse trains like this. And then you watch your horses and be like, oh, my horse trains just as well, or maybe not as well. You know, those, you're always looking and, you know, you're always learning. That's one thing about the business. If you're not trying to learn, and you know, you're going to fall behind, you got to keep going forward, because there's every day, you know, every day there's something new coming into it.
Yeah. And listening to the banter in the morning is sometimes really cool too. You can learn a lot of things just listening to the trainers talk amongst themselves. I think it's great. You know, most trainers like to talk.
And trainers that they're used car salesmen.
Yeah. Yeah. So while you're drinking your coffee and you listen to trainers hold court, you know, I learned a lot just by standing next to Charlie Whittingham at Santa Anita and listening to him talk. And those were in the days before walkie talkies and stuff, but listening to him give instructions to his riders. And then every once in a while, you know, he'd cut me in on what was going on. We're going to do this, we're going to do that. I'm pointing this horse to this race or that race. And you kind of get a feel, because when you're first starting out, usually your horses are pretty cheap and, you know, you're just trying to make a name for yourself. But you, later on, those things come back to you and you, Charlie would do this or Charlie would do that. And so, you know, you kind of learn that way, and it's kind of cool.
I was fortunate enough last winter to be at Payson Park for the winter. And I mean, it's a private training center in South Florida, and Mott, you know, Bill Mott's there, Christoph Clement, Roger Atfield, Shug McGahee, Rusty Arnold. So, I mean, that was a good experience.
And how'd you get in there?
No offense.
You
know,
you gotta pay.
You gotta pay. That's right.
So that was great. I mean, being able to be around those guys and, you know, going in as a young trainer and, you know, not knowing them and, you know, didn't know how they would take me or, you know, but it's first day walked up on the rail with my pony and they're standing there and, I mean, they talked to me like I was, you know, I'd been there for years, you know, one of their friends. I was surprised how well they brought me in. They're a great, great group of guys.
Yeah, talk about that aspect of this industry that we're all part of, the relationships and the openness that everybody has toward new people that come into the game. There's always somebody willing to teach you.
Yeah,
hope it's the right person.
There are, especially the guys that have had the success like them. You know, they have the confidence, and they're not the daily grinders that, you know, get a little jealous or, you know, get a little upset if somebody else does well. You know, those guys, they're confident in their training and they're confident in their horses, and you know, they're confident in life, and so, you know, they're happy to help you when you need it.
Until you start beating them.
Yeah.
Or until you take them down in the winner's circle after they beat you.
Yeah, like Charlie Whittingham said after I won my first 100-grander first graded race, he says, yeah, you got to squash the ants before they eat the whole picnic. So, yeah, but most trainers, they want you to do good. Yeah. I mean, it's a very unique business. We talk about the jocks all the time being in the same locker room and competitive, yet they're very close. A lot of them are very good friends, and it's the same with the trainers. I mean, the relationships that I've had with guys over the years, that you can't even believe it sometimes, you know, that you're having this discussion about training a horse with Bobby Frankel or something, and you just shake your head, you know, like, where did this come from? You know, it's really cool. And I think, you know, it, it, nowadays it's gotten away from that a little bit. You know, you mentioned the jealousy and stuff. There is some jealousy going on, but the guys at the really top level, the Hall of Fame guys and the guys just under them, they're going to do what they can to help somebody, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Most of the older guys are great guys. And there's been I've noticed this year an explosion of young trainers coming in. Mm-hmm. Just this spring meet, I've noticed 5 young trainers that have branched out on their own. And so, it's a tough competitive business. You know, you have to stay on the edge, and you're going to be a little bit jealous sometimes. But you know, it's like you said, the older guys, the more experienced guys that, you know, they've gone through the grind. You know, they've had the ups and downs of the business. They know how it is. And you know, now they're comfortable in their, you know, in their position and their training and their life. And then, you know, those are the guys that are the really, you know, like the Motts and the Clements, the really good guys that will, you know, reach out and help you. And, you know, I mean, like you said, you might be running against them tomorrow and they'll be, you know, giving you pointers on what you could do, you know, the day before. So, I mean, is a great thing about this business.
Will you pick their brain?
Oh, yeah, as much as I can. A lot of them don't, you know, they don't like to talk a ton, but, you know, whenever you get your chance, you know, you do.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty good stuff from Troy Wismer, who is with us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. You touched on jockeys. Do trainers have go-to jockeys?
Oh, absolutely.
That they'll use in a big situation?
Yeah, I think every trainer has their go-to jockey, especially, you know, we look at Pletcher and Johnny V, you know, and Christoph and Joel Rosario. I mean, you got to have people that you feel comfortable with, you know. I mean, sometimes a great jockey might not fit into your barn, you know, or, you know, like –
Really?
I mean, not so much. They don't fit, but you just have the jockeys that you feel comfortable with, mm-hmm. you know, and that you have a good relationship. When you go out there, you know, you know that, you know, they're going to do the best for you. Not saying jockeys don't do their best, but you feel comfortable with the guys that you put out there.
They have a relationship rapport.
Yeah, for sure.
Who are your go-to jockeys?
I like Luis Saez a lot. You know, we had a good run down in Gulfstream this winter. Robbie Alvarado's I've had a lot of success with him. I mean, I really like those guys a lot. Jose Ortiz, you know, he rides a couple 40 me tomorrow. He's a great kid. You know, I mean, he's having a phenomenal year. You know, those are the few guys I like a lot.
Yeah, Luis had a heck of a meet down there at Gulfstream, setting the record for a single meet. How many of those wins were for you?
2.
Nice. You had a hand in that.
Yeah, we had a little bit of hand. He actually rode my filly that broke the track record down there. And he won. No, that wasn't it. I won a race, the first race down there, I think on the 29th of last month, and it was the first, you know, it was the first race of the day, and he ended up winning 7 that day. Wow. So it got him started.
Yeah, 7. That's a lot.
Yeah,
he's done it twice.
A heck of a day.
Yeah.
It's a heck of a day, and yeah, he is one of the top riders in the sport today. You mentioned a rider fitting into your barn, or maybe fitting your program. I guess might even be another way to put it. Why are guys like Luis and the riders you mentioned, why are they a good fit for your barn and your program?
Luis, I went to Saratoga a few years ago, and Richard DePass, Luis's agent, is a very good friend of the family. Dad were good friends for a long time. Me and his kids grew up together. We used to spend the night. His son and I are the same age, and we'd spend the night at, you know, each other's houses. And so, you know, when I've tried, you know, when I did step up and start going to the bigger meets, Richard's been a great advocate for me. And he's helped me a lot. Anytime he can, he rides for me, which is a big help. You know, when you can have the leading rider and be able to get on your horses, owners like that. And it always helps that upswing. You know, I think a lot of times when a rider gets on a roll, it doesn't matter. You know, he gets horses there. Just, he doesn't make mistakes. He doesn't overthink. You know, it goes from thinking about where to go to just going by feeling. And when you're winning a lot of races, that's easy. So, I mean, that's a big plus on being able to ride the top guys.
Yeah, it's interesting how that actually does have an effect. It's just like, I guess, like a hitter in baseball or whatever, when they're seeing the ball well, or the jocks can actually
go through a slump.
Yeah, yeah, they'll either go through a slump or when they're really doing well, they're unbeatable. Basically. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy how that works, but I guess it's a confidence factor too. It makes you wonder what happens the rest of the year. You know what I mean? Like, how much confidence do you have, or what? I mean, I interviewed Gary Stevens.
I think jockeys are some of the most confident guys you'll ever meet. I mean, they're not very big, but they're very confident.
Even the girls.
Yeah, the female riders.
Yeah.
And I think the really top jocks, you have to be confident. You know, you're out there going fast and putting yourself in situations that, you know, you could be life, you know, life threatening.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, you have to be confident and competitive and, you know, have that edge to be a top jockey.
Yeah, I think sometimes the female jockeys are even more confident because they have to overcome so much to compete. So they always feel like I can do this. I can do it against anybody, you know, so come on, I'm ready for it. You know, I think there's a little bit more drive there sometimes.
And they're a little tougher. I mean, they have babies. We don't. You know, they're a little tougher than we are.
There's a man who admires his wife.
Yeah. It's like those mares. We talk about that all the time. They can get really tough, mm-hmm. some of those older mares.
Yeah, mares can get very, very competitive. You know, coming down the lane, you know, even an older mare that might have a few issues of you know, soundness. And come race day, when it comes to competition, I mean, all that goes out the window and they lay it down.
Troy, you're not going to believe this, but we only have about 3 minutes or so left in the show. This hour has really flown by.
Yeah. A lot easier than I thought it was going to be. Yeah. I was stressing it all morning long.
Every time you talk, somebody tells us about doing their first interview with us, it brings me right back to Kathy Ritvo and our visit with her at Gulfstream Park after Mucho Macho Man had won the Risen Star. And we went down and talked to her at her barn, and she hadn't done any interviews. And this was completely off air. We recorded with her. And she was much like you. She was a little nervous at first. And then next thing you know, she's out there at the Kentucky Derby with Mucho Macho Man. She's on NBC and she's doing television interviews everywhere.
She's an old pro. Mucho Macho Man's actually, I like Mucho Macho Man as a stud. I mean, he's actually thrown some fast. They look like they're going to be some fast competitive horses.
Yeah, he's a good horse.
Yeah, very good horse. We saw him when he was a skinny little boy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. All right. 2 minutes left. We always like to end by asking trainers to tell us something about themselves that people might not know. So I'll make it easy for you. When you're not at the racetrack, what other things does Troy Wismer enjoy doing?
I have two kids. My daughter's 8 and Avery, and my son is 2, Silas. And so, I mean, it's always good to be at home, especially because you travel so much and you are away a lot in this business. So it is nice when you're not at the barn to, you know, be at home and be with the kids. And then, well, I whenever I get a chance, I go rope. You know, that's limited these days when you get into 20 horses, it's an all day ordeal. But whenever I get the chance, I like to rope or play golf.
Pretty good golfer?
No. No, not a great one.
It's just an outlet.
Yeah, that's it. Shoot the high 80s, low 90s. That's, you know. But I like to go play.
The kids going to be horse trainers?
I hope not. Hope doctors or lawyers. They get weekends
clients.
Off. Yeah. Weekends off and vacations.
Well said. Troy Wismer here on Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton. Troy, it's been a great visit. Thank you so much.
Me.
And yeah, all
wonderful.
The best moving forward.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Wow. Fun stuff, JT.
Yeah. Yes. I'm glad your wife showed up.
Absolutely. Follow Troy Wismer and his horses at all the major tracks around the country. And our thanks to Troy. Our thanks to our producer, Lee Delapina, for pushing all the right buttons and trying to make us sound good in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studio. For Jute Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We will talk to you next week with an all-new Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Thanks for listening.